I've enjoyed playing here. This has been over 20 years that I've been coming to Royal Melbourne. And this way golf should be played.
We love coming down under.
Look, it's phenomenal to play. The quality of the golf's been great. But the enthusiasm of the people has been the thing that's just been amazing.
Tier of courses that I'm willing to shave my neck for in Kingston Heath and Victoria. Get me out of bed to shave.
Especially somewhere like Australia in the sand belt, and I have so many great memories of being down there.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Australian Golf Passport. Scott Warren here and joined as always by my co-host Matt Mollica.
Hi Scott. Hey Matty. Looking forward to another good episode. We had a mailbag episode late last year. We got stacks of good questions and it looks like we've got an equally good crop today. So looking forward to working through them with you.
Yeah, fantastic. Whenever we ask for mailbag questions, I always feel like I did at 15 when you were having a birthday party. And it got to like an hour before the party started and you started thinking like, what if no one fronts? What if we put this call out and there's no questions and then there's no mailbag episode and that would be humiliating. But 23 good ones, so we're going to do it.
So thank you to all of you who have submitted them as well. They were very appreciated, very welcome, and they gave me great joy in pondering some of them throughout the workday today. So hopefully the answers are up to scratch.
Unfortunately, Matty works for himself, so there's not even any, you know, like there's no boss that's going to hear that and think, Matty.
Nope. It's all on me.
All on you. So a bit of news of the week. We will kick off with the PGA Tour of Australasia event at the National. We sort of previewed that a little bit last week and speculated on how the course might play and a little bit of how the course might play with reference to recent rollback announcements and the state of modern equipment. What was your evaluation of all that, Matty?
Well, first of all, it was great. It was great just to see Mooner on TV, and that's one of the great advantages of that TPS string of tournaments and a couple of the other domestic tournaments, that we get a really good look on screen of courses that we've played lots or we're familiar with or we might have visited once a while ago. I was a member at the National for about 10 years and joined just prior to the Mooner course opening, played it lots, and to sit back on a Saturday afternoon and watch it on TV was a real thrill. And I'm sure there's thousands of National members and tens of thousands of National visitors who thought likewise. I thought it presented really well. By all reports, Lee Yanner and his ground staff had the place looking really, really good. So well done to them.
And with only a small gallery and no ropes as well, it's just a really fantastic look at the golf course. You're not just looking at a narrow corridor of the hole. You can see that Cups Country rolling off in the distance and holes in the far shot. It's just, it was perfect.
Yeah. And for the people who attended, they can wander around and stand behind a player and look down the line of the ball. They've got an unimpeded view around greens. It worked really, really well. So I'm sure the Nash would be very happy with the way that it went. In terms of your question,
no TIO relief either when there's no TIOs. We love that.
No 313 challenge, no TIO, no none of that. In answer to your question regarding the model local rule and the distance and how it stood up, our fears that you expressed briefly in the previous episode regarding the benign conditions and the mild forecast certainly seem to play out.
I was off by two shots.
Yeah.
I said they'd go out in 32 and home in 33, and Elvis Smiley went out in 30 and home in 33.
And Tom Power-Horan did on Sunday too. I think he bogeyed seven, but he had a hole in one.
He bogeyed par five.
Yeah. Which I was surprised. So I didn't see what happened there, but I was surprised to see that score break the string of threes. So interesting in briefly chatting about the week and the tournament with Clates. He caddied for Elvis Smiley, who we know had a course record earlier in the week and finished top five. Clates had done some quick arithmetic on Elvis's approaches into the par four holes throughout the 4 days of the tournament. And Elvis averaged 117 meters for his approach distance.
That's crazy, eh?
So that's his pitching wedge, which I think is a 46 degree pitching wedge. Those who are familiar, it didn't blow much, and they went to the plates most days, most holes, mm-hmm. almost all holes. But man, he didn't hit driver off 14 tee. Just hit 3-iron, 6-iron down there most days. Had some very short approaches on one. Didn't seem to be reaching for much club on any of the par 3 tees. So, yeah, that if that MLR gets adopted and it's going to knock 5% off carry distance for elite drivers and then a comparable percentage for their approach play, that would be something. I've always been of a mindset where I'd welcome that, but I'd welcome it even more now.
Yeah. One of the things I really liked, someone pointed out during the week that the plan is that it's 5%, right? But we really truly won't know what's going to happen until the ball actually gets produced and used in tournament conditions. And maybe we might find that it does something slightly different. You know, it might be a bit more of a drop, or it might, you know, behave in ways that haven't been kind of predicted or thought about around the greens or into greens, that changes the types of shots people have to hit. But I mean, weather and good architecture are undefeated, right? Because much like Ernie Els, was it 60-76 or something, yep, that he had it at Royal Melbourne West in the Heineken 20 years ago, you know, Elvis, no shade on Elvis, went 63-71. You know, the wind kicked up Saturday and probably some pins got tucked because it's the weekend, and all of a sudden it's not a 63 golf course. And I think that's one thing that we all just need to keep in mind, is that A, these guys are like freakishly good, and B, you know, in links type conditions, you see it at the Open all the time, the same golf course can be a minus 18 tournament score, or it can be a minus 4 tournament score, depending on the weather. And that actually has nothing to do with the merits of the golf course. But
yeah,
I was stoked to see Myrna on TV. I'm really pleased the Aussie Tour is focusing on playing at some really great golf courses. It's been sensational to watch for another summer, and now we just look forward to next summer.
Yeah. And congrats to those three who have gained a Euro Tour card for next year: Dave Micheluzzi, Tom Power-Horan, and Andrew Martin. They really sort of separated themselves from the rest of their peers throughout our Aussie summer, and they're deserving recipients of those prizes. Hopefully they go on to bigger and better things in Europe, and they get hot one week and win something over there, and it's a springboard to even greater stuff.
Yeah. Now, the other news of the week, breaking news, Matty, Masters Week.
The best week of the year.
Not sure if our listeners knew that, but it is Masters Week. And I was thinking that something very quick that we can do is, you know, the Augusta National of XXX is a popular discussion. And I thought, let's throw out some courses for Aussies that are, you know, an Augusta-ish experience that you can have in Australia. Now, the obvious one that jumps out is our only true kind of Alistair McKenzie complete design at Royal Melbourne West. I know Clates is on record as calling Royal Melbourne West the course Augusta National wishes it was. But a lot of those, you know, the big sweeping slopes and the roller coaster greens and the way that you need to go around like a game of chess and not a game of checkers is quite similar between the two. Augusta National, you know, is completely inaccessible for the Aussie golfer. Royal Melbourne is slightly more accessible, but still a challenge. I've got three more to throw at you.
Okay.
So I'm going to Brookwater for the first time next month, and that's one that I've heard people give the it's like Augusta treatment. Thoughts?
Yep. I had a short list and Brookwater was on it. The press photos and the promo images when it was first open for play were very Augusta-like, that long sweeping downhill par five on the back nine with the white sand and the trees either side of a pristine green fairway. It had that tenured Augusta feel about it.
Mm-hmm.
Big trees, much narrower, and I like the comparison between Royal Melbourne and Augusta, even though that the colours are different and the vegetation's different. The scale's comparable, and you've got room to play, and you can safely navigate your way around a hazard should you wish, and you can swing away wildly at times. And the greens are big roller coasters, so that there's some very similar DNA there between those two courses. Less shared architectural character with Brookwater, but there's a hint of aesthetic similarity.
Now, the other one that gets a lot of play is Bonneville. And I see it, having now been to Augusta. It's architecturally, it's not the same thing. You know, it's, you know, John Bonham versus a monkey whacking on a drum with a, you know, with a wooden spoon. It's not architecturally the same thing at all. But for most people, I think what they are chasing is that feeling of what Augusta feels like or what they perceive it to feel like. And I will give Bonneville credit. It's got, you know, a similar, probably warm, that warm, sticky climate. It's got the big, grand strands of trees that the sun shines through, you know, in the afternoon and throws those dappled shadows. It's got scale, which I think is one of the great things about Augusta National, is huge scale. And I also really like, now I'll happily join in, you know, the bashing of the fact that Bonneville rates so highly on so many lists, and there are people that think it's just the greatest golf course. But without feeling like I'm at all talking out of both sides of my mouth, I adore the 10th hole and the 18th hole there, which kind of replicate, if not the whole holes, the approaches to 13 and 15 at Augusta. 10 plays across a creek that runs at an angle across you, and you know, you tend to have a long club like a wood in there. It's quite 13 at Augusta. The creek sits on the different kind of 45 degree angle, but 18, you drive up over a crest and you play down towards this plantation style clubhouse over the water at the front. It's basically 15 at Augusta reimagined. And I do love both those holes. I get a big smile on my face both times I play them. If you get the drive away, if I don't get the drive away, I just throw a ball down where I wanted the drive to be, because I want to hit those two approach shots. So I will give Bonneville its due there. It does have, and that clubhouse is just a really nice place to, you know, hang out, have drinks. It does nail that kind of vibe spot. The last one I've got for you is Avondale in Sydney.
Okay.
So the reason for that is, so Avondale's a very understated private club, no tee times, a very old style, you know, basic clubhouse, the type that you actually see a lot more in America than you see in Australia. Now, it's a Ross Watson course. I think it's probably Ross Watson's best course. Certainly without Graham Marsh, it's his best course. And there's big rolling land there. It's quite expansive and wide, and it's secluded in this kind of northern Sydney bushland behind a private school. So it's very kind of peaceful and ambient. And that just gives me a little bit. There's some big rollicking par fives over hills, you know, with massive, massive expanses of bunker that give you that contrast of white and green. So Avondale in Sydney, I think, is a little bit that way too.
Yeah, I can see that. I was talking about this with a mate earlier today, and he threw up the Grand as a suggestion. And that has an aesthetic that is similar to Bonneville in some ways. There's some water in play, and you feel like you're hitting shots to greens that are closely guarded by little waterways on one or two holes there. The only other suggestion I had was Rosebud North. So there's 36 holes at Rosebud, which you pass when you exit the Peninsula Freeway and head further down to the National or St Andrews Beach or elsewhere. And the north course at Rosebud Country Club, much of it's lined by pine trees and they've got yellow flags.
There you go.
And when I, more than half my life ago, used to play four games with one particular golfing mate around the time of each of the majors, and we'd play something coastal around the time of the British Open, and we often found ourselves at Rosebud North in April.
That's cool.
Trying to replicate the Masters. So
yellow flags goes a long way to creating Augusta vibes.
Yeah, it does. Surprising.
All right. Questions.
All right. Let's go. Our first one from Nick Ng. Golf in Australia has exploded through COVID. Thoughts on private club membership categories, for example, 4 to 6 day memberships, and whether they're needed in current golfing environment. Is the model still relevant, or can clubs revert back to single category membership, i.e. full membership?
I think in theory, those types of restricted memberships are a good thing for modern membership types. I think that they, in theory, acknowledge that there are people like you and I, young professionals, who may be parents to young children, who aren't going to play Saturday and, you know, maybe won't be able to play the midweek comp, and it creates a more affordable option. I think it helps to spread play through the week in theory so that different days are attractive to different people. I think in practice, my experience of them and what I've heard from others who have seen them in play at their clubs is that they sort of produce second-class citizens within the club, and they often involve that type of that category of member not having voting rights, say, or they, you know, the club's range will be off, you know, if they have a turf range, it'll be off turf on Wednesday and Saturday, but off the synthetic block at the back every other day. You know, little things will be different that cater towards what the club views as its main days. So yeah, I think in theory it was a great thing. I think in practice it just, the notion of community, which a club is, doesn't sit comfortably with these different stratas. I think the reckoning that we'll see, what Nick refers to, and the return to a lot fewer categories for members, also sits around the issues of gender equity in clubs. I know that there's a number of clubs in Sydney at the moment who are evaluating their options moving forward because there's jungle drums beating that they need to reconcile the membership offering that they have for men and for women. And probably the most simple way to do that is one category of membership in the club. You're either a member of the golf club or you're not. And I think that's probably something that will work simplest and best. And yeah, certainly the demand that COVID's created for private club membership, I think for the coming decade, it's probably something that clubs can, that, you know, well-performing clubs in cities that have sufficient demand, they can have one category and not worry that's going to destroy their wait list.
Yeah. I agree with much of what you said. The difficulty for clubs offering a suite of membership options is that there starts to be some inequity between the seven-day members and others. Speaking as someone who's used a non-playing membership at a club or has non-membership or non-playing membership status at a club during peak work and family demands, In that phase of your life, I will sing the praises of their value and appreciate the opportunity to take up that sort of membership offering. I have a friend who's gone non-playing at the moment, expecting his second child, and his first one's under three. And I think that if there was some sort of middle ground, like Nick talks about, four-day membership, six-day memberships, he's a very intelligent, very good playing, active, long-time member in his 30s, He served on committees at the club. My fear is that the club will sort of lose him a little bit, and they'd keep him a bit closer if there was some sort of middle ground membership offering available to him at this time.
Yeah,
and I think that's going to be important, as you said, for young professionals who get slammed at work and have rising mortgage costs and kids.
Yeah,
they've got to make that sort of middle ground work, but it's not. I take your point. It's not easy.
No, that's a good counterpoint though to what I did say. Now, Scarecrow81 asked us on Instagram, I'm heading to Canberra soon. Should I just play Royal Canberra again, or should I play at Federal?
If you've not played at Federal before, I'd go to Federal.
I like Federal.
I like it. I think that it's always good to try and see as many courses as you can. It's not as if Royal Canberra's Pine Valley and you're going to ignore everything else in a 40-mile radius. I'd go to Federal.
Mm. If you play early doors at Federal, you get great kangaroo action. There's dozens of them out there. I really enjoy, it's got a great set of par threes that are really varied. It's got some really good land movement that Royal probably lacks a little bit. On both nines, you play up, down, and across some pretty steep land. Federal's also got quite a different club to Royal. So I think it's just a good bit of variety. Definitely recommend, if you haven't played at Federal, that you go out there.
Yeah. You'd have an Italian dinner at Locale in Deakin while you're in Canberra. You'd go to Silo, the bakery in Kingston. You'd have drinks at Bar Rochford that night. There's plenty to do in Canberra. Yeah. Stacks to do in Canberra.
If you're into Indian food, then there is I'm desperately trying to bring it up while I pad. if you're into Indian food, there's a sensational spot called Dana, D-A-A-N-A, in Curtin, which is like a southwest suburb with nothing much else necessarily to recommend a visit. I'm sure it's a lovely place to live. But we went out there on a recommendation from a friend and it blew us away. And we used to live in an Indian suburb in London. So our marker is pretty high. So yeah, Canberra's come along so far in the last... We go down probably every winter if we can, just for long weekend with the kids. It's a good way to get out of Sydney in winter. And my sister went to uni there in the 90s and it was Bathurst. Probably didn't have as much going on as Bathurst, to be honest. And now it's like in Braddon there, cafes and bars and microbreweries and whatnot. Canberra's, sensational.
Yeah. Bent Spoke, Capital Brewing. Yeah. There's plenty of places to go in Manuka. It's good. It's good. Tommy Dean has asked, what would you recommend a visitor to Melbourne does away from golf?
Well, to continue the conversation about Canberra, eat and drink. I love Sydney. I'm a passionate Sydney sider, but Melbourne dining and drinking and the rooftop bars and whatnot are sensational. So I would plan your visit to Melbourne, if not around golf, then around what are you going to eat and drink before and after golf. It was mentioned in our episode with Joe and Todd, but Oscar Cooper in Prahran is probably my favorite cafe anywhere. And anytime I go to Melbourne, I try to go to Oscar Cooper and order. They do eggs Benny, but with potato rosti instead of toast. Ooh. And it's just magnificent. So there's some incredible breakfast, incredible bars, incredible restaurants, whatever the cuisine is that you like, do a bit of homework. And that to me is a centerpiece of a visit to Melbourne. I also, as a visitor, and I want to get to you, Maddie, because you've lived there your whole life, so you'll have much more to say on this. But I reckon if you're into like exercise, a run around the tan track is just a really nice Melbourne thing to do for me. Anytime I go to Melbourne, if I've got time, throw on the joggers and just do a lap of the tan. It just, yeah, Really like that.
Yeah, that's a good suggestion. Yeah. Used to run around the Tan Weekly for years, and it was always good. It's a great little track, and it's manageable. It's short. There's one little hill that gives you a good workout towards the end. So definitely food and drink. That's a big, big part of it. Day trip to the Yarra Valley. There's plenty to do out there. You could stay out there for a whole weekend if you wanted to stay overnight at Hillsville or some sort of Airbnb somewhere out in that neck of the woods. If you are adventurous and you want to drive further from town, the penguin parade, fairy penguins at Phillip Island, is a great experience, particularly if there's kids coming with you. In town, if you've got a day where you're going to hit some bars and have a nice lunch and then do some shopping and then have a dinner out, I'd take some of the shopping out on one of those days. If that's going to be a multi-day sort of approach for you, I'd go to the National Gallery, which is really cool. There's always good collections there. Great way to spend a couple of hours. But yeah, I think it's restaurants first and foremost. Our next question.
Jonathan Goldsmith. What would be the best courses in Greater Melbourne that aren't in the Sandbelt 8 Club? And Maddie, I think for the purpose of this question, we're excluding the Mornington and Bellarine.
Definitely.
Yeah.
He's talking Greater Metropolitan Melbourne.
So we're like Frankston round to Werribee.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good perimeter. I asked a few mates for help on this. It seemed the consensus was either Riversdale, which is an Alec Russell course, where they play the Riversdale Cup, or Rosanna, which was a Mike Clayton Renault before OCCM. So it does get a little bit tough. The caliber drops pretty quickly when you move away from the Sandbelt. I had memories of playing Kingston Lynx, which was out past VFL Park out in Waverley, which was a Tony Cashmore design course that was really one of the first sort of country club for a day, high-end pay-to-play courses in Melbourne in the 90s. Yeah. And I always really, really enjoyed playing there. Unfortunately, that's now a housing estate, or it's been flattened and it's in the throes of being turned into a housing estate.
So I have a nomination for you that you've probably overlooked, because I think I'm picking up what Jonathan Goldsmith's putting down, which is he talks about the Sandbelt 8. Now there's this marketing tool, right? The sandbelt.com. So the Sandbelt 8 is Commonwealth, Huntingdale, Metro, Kingston Heath, PK, RM, Yarra Yarra, and Victoria. So either they weren't invited or they declined to pony up what was required to fund this. Woodlands, despite being really as Sandbelt as any of the courses I just named, is not part of the marketing trademark, the Sandbelt.
I see where you're going now. Yeah,
I mean, that's absurd.
Yeah, it is. It is. So the Sandbelt, if you can define the Sandbelt in lots and lots of different ways. I think if you were to look at it via ecology, like if you got a map of the soils and said, okay, well, this sort of terrain, this sort of soil, this sort of vegetation, this sort of topography, it extends from St Kilda to Frankston and slightly beyond. Woodlands is in that by any measure. So it's, yeah, I see where Jonathan's going now. I was thinking suburban courses, not on sand. I was thinking clay, thinking where are their houses all around them? And it dipped quickly.
Yeah.
One of my mates said it's like trying to pick the girl left in the bar at 3 a.m. who was the least ugly of those remaining.
Oof.
I thought that was a bit harsh.
Or the bloke left in the bar at 3 a.m. who's the least ugly of those remaining for our female listeners.
That's
or for our male listeners who are looking at bars at 3 a.m. for blokes. We cater to everybody on AGP. And, yeah, it's a stinker in a bar at 3 a.m. regardless of gender or orientation.
Wasn't going to edit this episode, and now I might.
No, that's it is interesting because, like, Melbourne's, and we've gone through this in previous episodes, but Melbourne's best golf blows most cities in the world off the map. But Melbourne's accessible golf is probably behind Sydney's accessible golf. And, you know, Sydney's quote unquote a crap golf city. So yeah. It is interesting. It's just part of, you know, Melbourne has 6 or 7 of the best golf courses in the world. It's got Mornington and Bellarine that have 3 or 4 or 5 each of a supporting cast. But when you go down to the golf that a lot of people have on tap week to week, you know, Melbourne's not the showstopper that it is when you look at other entry points.
They're not on a McKenzie or a Doak, no. So, JJ Rush had asked, any tips to get on Elliston? I'm trying to play all top 100 courses in Australia.
I can only recommend that you maybe try and do business with any of the businesses or companies that the Packers own, or hang out at the Aussie and try and meet the people at the Aussie who have some access, I don't know if they're members of Elliston, but have the ability to go through those gates. It's a pretty tough one.
Yeah. I would, I don't know who you would write a letter to, whether it's someone at Elliston, charity auctions. People have bought rounds at charity auctions previously.
Yeah. If so, you need to be prepared to spend some coin, but those charity auctions generally involve helicopter transfers to and from Sydney. If it's that important to you, you know, the number on the top of my head, Matty, is that it was like you could buy the 4-ball for about 10 grand.
Yeah, that was what I had in mind too. And I thought if you've got 3 mates who
it's a charity auction, so you write it off on tax. So it owes you, say, 6.
Yeah.
Yeah. 1500 a man.
Yeah.
It's reasonable value actually at that.
But there's not very many people playing it.
No.
JJ. And there's been phases where it's just not been in play at all for works or floods or cold.
Yeah. Well, there's a period during the drought where they just said it's not going to get played because we can't present the way we want to, which is the great luxury they have.
Yeah.
So dropping down one tier from how do I get on Elliston, Matty, Jono Spencer asks us, any tips to get onto members-only courses?
Something we touched on really early on in probably episode 2 or 3, and it certainly seems easier in Sydney with the accessibility of some courses to non-members for part of the week, just for a reasonably accessible green fee or modest green fee in comparison to what you'd expect to pay at times.
One of the big differences in Melbourne, the private clubs that you can play if you pay a fee is for people from outside Victoria. Whereas, for instance, New South Wales Golf Club, you can live in Little Bay, you know, a kilometre away. And if you're prepared to pay the green fee, they'll allow you on 3 days a week, which is what you refer to there.
Yeah, that's a really neat thing. I remember when you said that the first time, I was quite impressed by it and sort of thought, well, maybe there's scope for that in Melbourne. Getting onto members-only courses, most of them will still have a charity day once a year where there'll be a nominated charity or a partner charity of the club where there'll be publicly accessible tea times and you pay your green fee and it's a donation to the charity. Some tournament play as well, obviously.
Ivos and Vardens.
Yeah. And then if you're, I think one of the things that we found through our participation in online golf forums is that we met lots of like-minded people and we formed friendships through those shared passions. And you'd play a golf day somewhere public, or then you'd strike up a friendship with someone and then say, oh, we'll have another game, or you come to my club or I'll come to yours. And yeah, you just build a network through that shared interest and shared love of golf. And that sometimes takes time to grow.
It takes time. It's like a drop of water on a rock. Or, you know, like the story about the stone split of it. It's not the 100th strike that breaks the rock. It's the 99 before. Speaking from personal experience, you're kind of adjacent to so many people for so long playing this game. And then you meet the right person on the right day and make the right impression. And then it's like dominoes. Once you meet that one person, well, they know someone here who knows someone there, and you know someone there. And before you know it, you have like a dozen people that you're mates with that played all these places. But like, I've been playing golf for 20 something years before that first domino dropped. So I think it is actually just, be a good bloke or a good chick, love the game. I saw a great thing on LinkedIn, which is a rare thing for me to say because LinkedIn sucks, but I saw a great thing on LinkedIn recently that was like lessons for young professionals. And number one said, networking is about giving. And I think that applies here as well, is that it's like, if you're hanging around the game of golf, trying to just blag access out of people, people who have access will smell that a mile away and just avoid you. So I think it's about, if you love the game and you're genuinely interested in the people you play with, these things just have a serendipitous way of happening.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Alternately, buy a luxury car, because so many of the corporate days at these top-end clubs these days tend to be like the freaking BMW Owners Association. Or
Audi, Mercedes, 100%. Porsche Club.
Yeah, 100%. So if all else fails, if you're too much of a dirtbag to convince someone that you're a good bloke and invite you to their club, buy a European car, and there's probably a club you can join that on every Tuesday or Thursday goes to a different sick golf course and plays it for a couple of $100.
Yeah. I don't know if Drummond Club still do that. They certainly did that when I was in my golfing infancy. They'd go to different places. Italian Golf Association did that as well. There's lots of, that's another one actually. There'll be societies or social groups that go from place to place that might open some doors for you too. So hopefully that's some good advice, Jono. A nice walk spoiled. Asked a really cool question that I was ruminating on for much of the day. If you had unlimited budget, where would each of you build a course in Australia and by which architect?
Okay. So I live in southern Sydney in the Sutherland Shire. And so we essentially have two big headlands that sit north and south of Cronulla Beach. One is Kurnell and one is Bundina. Now, Bundina's National Park, much of Kurnell is also National Park. But in Kurnell, there is a Caltex oil refinery. And on the north side of Kurnell is Botany Bay, which is the waterway that New South Wales Golf Club sits on. And on the south side is Bait Bay, which is the big bay that Cronulla Beach and all of the associated beaches are on. And I have this dream that, in my work, I've worked on some projects remediating mines, and there'll come a day where the Caltex refinery stops processing oil and that site will need to be remediated. And I have this fixation on somehow being involved in remediating that piece of land by building a golf course on it. And it looks out over Botany Bay to the north. It looks south over the water towards Cronulla and the Royal National Park. And so for me, you know, Bundina on the southern side is probably a better piece of land with more undulation. It's kind of a headland with the Pacific Ocean on one side and Port Hacking on the other. But that feels, I feel like red tape would affect that. It's pristine bushland. A remediating a oil refinery feels like a more achievable target. So we're going to go at Cornell. And I really love what Zach Blair has been able to do at the tree farm and the way he went about it, whereby it's his project and Tom Doak routed it in consultation with Zach, and Kai Golby designed the holes in consultation with Zach. I don't kid myself that I could design a golf course that would be worth a damn myself, but I would love to work with someone of the ilk of Tom Doak and the ilk of Kai Golby to route and design something on that land. And I mentioned in that previous episode, we talked about Sydney Golf, that Cronulla Golf Club, which is the closest course to that, is on, I think from memory, 74 acres. So if need be, we're doing a land swap and we're developing that land in Cronulla, and Cronulla Golf Club's moving out to Cornell. And on the, now, which architect would I use? That was an important part of the question. Okay, so I'm going to say that I'm going to use Bill Corr to route it, because there's not a ton going on and he's like Mr. Subtlety. So we'll do that. And then I am going to use, because in this fantasy, I can fund all of this and it's not, you know, I'm going to use Lucas Michel and Nick Mills to design it for me.
Oh, your logo and your yardage book and your
all
branding.
All my drone shots are taken care of.
This is just going to be heavenly. Wow. All right. Oh, I love that. I'm drooling at the thought of that. If it, could it be nine holes only if that site, if the site was restrictive? Would you be happy with nine only, or would you do 12, or you?
I'll build as many holes as we have room for. I'm not going to force 18 if it doesn't want 18.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, I've lulled myself to sleep many, many times in the past 15 years thinking of a golf course that I built after a Powerball win. Mine is Coastal in Victoria, and I'm going to be probably a significant disappointment here, and I'm not going to say where it is because there's a slight chance that it'll happen one day and I don't want,
okay.
I don't want that land to go, and I don't want it to jack up in price. I have the flags and the logo designed, the name of it designed. And
is it slightly west of the Bellarine on the opening stretches of the Great Ocean Road?
No.
Okay.
That's a good guess. It's Coastal. Yeah. And I would have a very difficult time. I would probably write to Clates and apologise to him, but I would have a very difficult time not phoning Tom Doak saying, just come down here and do what you want. I get the feeling when he's gone and that our grandkids are playing golf, the same way that we talk about those golden age guys and we look at some clubs in Melbourne and think, oh my God, McKenzie came here and these guys didn't touch him. Well, they rejected him. What the hell would they do that for? I look back at Tom and I look at Tom and think he's going to be like that.
Mm. Yeah,
that's a very vanilla answer. I'm sorry, but yeah, that's what I feel.
I think it's one of those things that we often, when we look at these really old clubs and they don't have records of certain things from, you know, when they were founded in the 1920s or the 19 teens or whatever, like, why didn't they keep all of that? And it's that realization that they didn't realize at the time how significant they were going to be and how important all of these records and milestones would be. And I think you make a really good point about Tom Doak, that I think he is someone that will be remembered that way and whose influence and legacy. It's hard to evaluate legacy when someone's alive. It's hard to look at that dispassionately or kind of historically when they're still walking around. But yeah, I think that's a good shout. Mm. And we're so lucky, right, that like Mackenzie came here, the place that Tom Doakes designed the most golf courses outside of the United States is Australia.
Yeah. And a couple in New Zealand, stone's throw away. So yeah, we're very fortunate.
Yeah, the Antipodes is you know, blessed.
Yeah. But that was great question. Nice walk spoiled. Thank you.
If anyone builds that course on the Kurnell on the Caltex facility without me, I will hunt you down.
A pox on you.
Now, Matthew Delahunty.
I really liked this, Matt. This stretched me thinking this about this yesterday and today. Yep.
What's the best renovation work or new build in the past 20 years by an architect who is not from OCM or CDP, which is Clayton, DeVries and Pont, OCM, Ogilvy, Cocking and Mead? Now, I think it's cheating, right? Because Tom Doak and Bill Corr don't fit under that umbrella of OCM or CDP. So Lost Farm, Barney Dunes, St. Andrews Beach and National Gunnamatta are all in play.
Yeah. So I tried to break it down into renovation stuff and I couldn't go past Doak at Royal Melbourne East or Doak and Co. at Yarra Yarra. I thought they were the best two. It's fascinating, though, when you look down that Golf Australia classification of the top 50 courses in the country and you think of the reno work that Clates and OCM have done throughout the nation, it's just tick, 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 all the way down that list. It's mm-hmm. remarkable. And it's all corners of the continent. It's Carinup, Grange, West Course, Royal Queensland, Lakes, Bonnie Doon, Victoria, Kingston Heath. It's everywhere. Different locales and different styles, but they've acquitted themselves really, really well. So I thought Royal Melbourne East or Yarra Yarra for the best reno. And Greenfield site, new build, I thought, well, you can't go past Lost Farm.
Now, if we distilled a bit further than Della asked us, what about by an Australian architect who's not Clates, Mike Cocking or Ashley Mead? Have you played the cut?
I have played the cut.
James Wiltshire fascinates me because... So the little council course nearest to me that I take my kids to and I go and play midweek if I could sneak away, the Ridge, was James Wiltshire building on top of a tip. And it's sensational. But then I look at a bunch of the other stuff that he's built and I think I get shades of Ross Watson, who had a bunker shape that he just Control-C, Control-V'd all over every golf course he renovated. And I feel like I look at the cut and Wiltshire's like, it's a piece of land that very few architects will ever get. And there are people who make jokes about there being a consonant missing between the U and the T in the course's name because it's that hard. But what do you reckon about the cut?
I rated it really highly when I first played it, and I rated it too highly. I was blown away by it on the first visit. There's a four-hole stretch on the back nine that is on pretty nondescript land where there'd be more houses now than there were when I first played it. There's also a high-rise tower smack bang in your face when you play the first hole that wasn't there when I first played it. It's high points. Its high points were a blend of New South Wales and National Old.
Mm.
And it heaves in parts. And the beach is right there and the wind hits you and the vegetation's beautiful and the soil's sandy. It was narrow in parts and ball swallowing in parts and hard. I did like it. And the second time I went back and played it, I thought, this is good. It's not as good as I first thought it was, but it's good. To get back to Della's question, I stretched it slightly with 2023 and I looked at things that opened post 2000, and that includes National Mooner. So it's just outside his bracket for 20 years, but Norman Harrison, Nash Mooner, that was at the forefront of my mind when I was thinking about greenfield sites that weren't OCM or CDP.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was a good question though. Yeah. Wilch is a good shout. There's a couple of other questions further down about Australian architects and Australian courses that might have us hark back to that one too. So a nice walk spoiled. One trip for an Australian to one stop in the US. Where are you headed?
Hmm. I haven't mentioned my trip last March, April to North and South Carolina and Georgia as much in this podcast as I've mentioned my home club or Tom Doak or some of the other bingo card entries, but I've mentioned it a bit. And that's because, so it's a year ago now that I was taking that trip. I was in Charleston a year ago. Maybe I played Caledonia this day a year ago. It honestly, Matty, every 3 to 5 days, I think about that trip. And every 3 to 5 weeks, I jump on Google Flights to see if maybe there's a really super good value fare I can nab and go and do it again. Like, so for me, depending on how generous a nice walk spot wants to be on the one stop, I'm saying like the greater Pinehurst area, or if you'll allow me to include sort of Pawleys Island just near Charleston as part of the same trip. You know, potentially now with the Tree Farm and Old Barnwell joining Palmetto, Aiken Golf Club and the Chalk Farm, I might just be happy in Aiken, South Carolina, which is a great old, you know, 19th century resort town. It's, to me, that's the place I've gone in golf that's not St. Andrews that just owns me. But in terms of a trip I've never done, I would say Phoenix, Scottsdale area. I'm just obsessed with the idea of desert golf and I want to go and see what the reality is like.
Chris Day will tell you. Golf Guy 77. He'll be able to Sherpa you through there. That's his neck of the woods. Mm. So
what about you?
I've never been to Bandon and I'd love to go there. If I came away from there having been there for a week and played everything twice and soaked up what it had to offer, I reckon I'd have had the trip of a lifetime. Depending on the terms of the one stop and how connected you were, if you said, well, I'm going to drive from LA to San Francisco or vice versa, if you were connected, that would be a really, really memorable trip as well. Mm. And there's some public courses in there. There's some uber private courses in there that you're going to need a lot of luck to access.
Yeah. I tried to think about public as the entry point here because, you know, you could go to Long Island, but.
Yeah. Fry said one day Shinnecock the next is not on everyone's itinerary.
No, it's not.
California's manageable in some ways in that you've got Paso Tiempo and those courses at Pebble Beach are accessible, but they're expensive. North and South Carolina's good.
Honestly, mate, it's...
That's a good... Yeah. Okay.
All right. Angus and Grace Go Golfing. Mate, they don't just make extremely sustainable, wonderful to wear, highly striking golf clothing. They also ask captivating questions about golf. So thank you to, I don't know if it was Angus or Grace that came up with this question, but Matt Burns kindly passed it along on their behalf. So go to angusandgracegogolfing.com. go to Angus and Grace Go Golfing on Instagram, or go to William Street in Paddington in Sydney to visit the shop and see the range of clothing, some great golf art on the walls, some great old gear out the back. Yeah, really a great place to go and stop in. Meet the man himself, Matt Burns. If you pick your day right, meet Angus and Grace. But thank you to Angus and Grace Go Golfing for their support of the pod, and thank you to Angus and Grace for their question. If you were a golf hole, Matt Mollica, what kind of golf hole would you be?
I think I'd be a postage stamp. Okay. I'd be a short par three.
Hmm.
I've always really, really liked the challenge that they pose. You've got to be accurate. You've got to be precise. They're playable for anyone. But if you miss your little target, whether it's 16 at 13th Beach, whether it's 7 at Barnboogle, whether it's 16 at Paraparumu Beach, you're in trouble. Yeah. And they've always appealed to me as that motto at Royal Troon, as much by skill as by strength, has always appealed to me. And I think those sorts of holes embody it. From an architectural perspective, you can almost stick them anywhere if they're 100 metres long. They could get you out of a bind and use up some land that you wouldn't otherwise use. Yeah, short par three. You?
So I would say I am... If you were a golf hole, what kind of golf hole would you be? I took this very kind of like deep and spiritual into who
as,
I am.
As our listeners can't see the hands just while you're doing that, but I can assure you they were worth it. They were on point. Okay.
So if I was a golf hole, I would be any of most of the holes at Augusta National, because they've changed a lot in the last 20 years. Some people would say for the better. Some people would say for the worse. Someone would say they were better when they were more dramatic and unpredictable. And some would say that they are better now that they are more defined and matured and predictable. And I feel like that...
This is
as true of Scott Warren as it is of Augusta National Golf Club.
Fantastic answer. Love that. I think Matt got more than he bargained for there. That was very, very good. Well done. Love it. All right.
Angus and Grace Go Golfing.com, Angus and Grace Go Golfing on Instagram.
Thanks. Really good, really good podcast with Jimmy Emanuel and Adrian Logue and Rod Murray, the Good Good Golf podcast. They had an hour's chat with Matt recently about him, the brand, all things fashion. Fantastic listen. If you've not gone and downloaded that podcast, I'd urge you to. You'll really enjoy it.
Yeah, indeed.
And can echo Scott's words. Get into that shop and go take a look. Thanks, Matt. All right, Wadler, his question. Loving the podcast, lads. Thank you. Thank you for listening. We really do appreciate everyone who listens. Best practice facilities in Australia. I feel like I'm missing something obvious, but for me, PK, I counted 5 practice greens, the National and RQ, while the best practice putting greens are at RM and Cape Wickham.
Well, congratulations, Wadler, on that's a pretty good list of places that you can reference the practice facilities on. So let that not go unnoticed.
Jono Spencer, any tips for getting onto members only courses?
Ask Wadler.
I would say Jono Spencer, hit up Wadler.
Now, Wadler, I don't know, mate. I on a good day, rock up to the first tee about 6 minutes before my tee time. I legit couldn't tell you. I'm trying to think when I last used a practice facility other than the one at my own club. I don't know. I'm no good. And I suspect Matt Mollick is not much more well-placed than I am to talk about practice facilities.
No,
I will say before I throw to you, Matty, I love a range where you can hit your own golf balls And so I would say the little range to the left of the first hole at Kingston Heath is worth a mention. I hate hitting limited flight golf balls, even if they're the really good Titleist ones. Nah, no deal. I want to hit proper golf balls off turf. So, yeah, that little range at the Heath is a good one.
Kingston Heath was going to be the one that I added to his list, whether it's that little chipping green and the short range that's adjacent to the first for a warm-up. Their practice putting green is huge and curvy and representative of what you get out on the course, and it's always the same speed as what you get on the course. There's a flat area under the eaves right next to the pro shop where if you just want to put a stroke on a ball and see that you're sending it 10 feet straight, you can. Good range of target greens on their practice range too, and it's always off turf. So big shout out for Kingston Heath. If you were if you drove through the gate at PK, Scott, and said, look, I'm staying here and it's 11 a.m. and I'm staying here tonight and I'm just going to have something to eat and then I'm going to come out here and cruise around and pitch and hit some full shots and then go to that little chipping area and then go have some putts and I'm going to while away some hours till I go back in at 4 p.m. and have a drink and a bit of a nibble before dinner, you could do that very, very easily and very enjoyably with their practice facilities. There's chipping greens. There's fantastic practice putting greens. They're all over the place. There's a practice putting green near a hut between 9 green and 12 tee on the north course where you just while away the time if there's a backlog and think, oh, I'll just have a couple of putts. Or there's a shotgun here and there's 3 or 4 tees and greens close by and so guys can get out early and have a putt before things commence. PK have really done a fantastic job with all that master planning. So I'd echo his... echo Waddler's suggestion of Peninsula Kingswood.
I think I'm allergic to practice because I nicked out in my lunch break last week, went out to New South Wales because I've been hitting not good bunker shots for a long time and I thought I'm going to fix this. And they've just built that new chipping area that's sort of between the first tee and the range. And I thought I'm going to sort my bunker play out once and for all. And about 7 shots into this reform session, I thinned one, but I got it clean enough. I didn't hit the equator and whack it into the sod face. I got it clean enough that it launched, Maddie, and that bunker plays back towards the storage facility. And on top of the storage facility is car parking. So I knifed this. Well, not knifed. I just caught it clean as a whistle, launched it. There was one other guy using the practice green who just looked at me like blood left his face. It took flight over the practice green. It gathered altitude over the storage building. And it was a busy day and the car park was chockers. And I was like, oh, just waiting for that sound of... And I got 1, 2, 3 bounces on tar. And then I heard vehicle, right? But it's bounced 3 times at this point. So I kind of very slowly made my way up. And I looked for about 10 minutes for this golf ball. And I couldn't find the golf ball. I kind of had a good idea what line it was on. I looked at all the cars. I couldn't see damage. I gave up the hunt. I don't think I damaged a car. But I felt afterwards, because I made a specific point of going to practice this day, and I actually thought as I walked back to my bag, like, this is why I don't practice. Nothing good can come of it.
See, I feel pretty comfortable answering Waddler's comments there or questions there, because I'll now, if I've got an indulgent day where I've got time, I will get to a course 2 hours before my tee time. And think, I'm going to use what facilities are here, going to really feel comfortable, get my whole back warmed up and take a look around the clubhouse. And yeah, I love doing that.
Yeah, well, and to evidence that, we played at RM 2 weeks ago and our tee time before the storm came through was meant to be 8:10. And you sent me a photo at 6:15 of the course. So he's not even embellishing. Andrew Melville. Here's a question for you, Maddie. Has Liv, I didn't mean to laugh. Has Liv saved the PGA Tour? Has it forced them to innovate?
So many ways we can go with this. The PGA Tour, in my mind, has definitely done things to improve in the last 18 months that they probably would never have done otherwise. I'm not sure that they've innovated a lot. Seems to be a lot of very wealthy world
top up the cash, right?
Top 50 guys playing for more money inside Florida and Texas and California.
I also adore the narrative of Liv saving the PGA Tour. Like, I kind of view it like, imagine you were just like walking down the street and I abducted you and dragged you out to like a rural dam and held your face underwater until you'd almost stopped twitching. And then I pulled you up and was like, I saved you.
You were drowning.
You were about to die. And now I've saved you. Like, I think we need to, I think we can acknowledge that the PGA Tour was fat and lazy for a very long time, serving a very narrow interest point, and acknowledge that LIV Golf objectively sucks. And those two things aren't mutually exclusive.
Yep. Spot on. Yeah. I just can't help but think, why did you not talk to Andy Gardner 5 years ago? Like, this could have been so much better.
And the PGA Tour, still not playing around the world.
No.
It's playing fewer events with meaningful progression of talent. It's, you know, and I, whenever you express distaste towards LIV Golf, people say, oh, PGA Tour, this PGA Tour. Yeah, absolutely, 100%. I'm not a PGA Tour golf fan. I'm a Jordan Spieth fan, and I'm a Rory fan, and I'm a Dustin Johnson fan, and a Cam Smith fan, and a name any player you like fan. Like, the idea that, and it's only in golf, like in, people don't go, oh, I'm an NRL fan. They say, I'm a Bulldogs fan, or a Sharks fan, or a Broncos fan, or a Storm fan. People aren't fans of leagues. People are fans of teams that represent their community or tribe, or they're fans of a particular player that resonates with them. We just have to lose in golf this whole idea that we're fans of a league. Like,
yeah,
the PGA Tour could cease to exist tomorrow, and if a league popped up that all of the same players played on and played against each other, and it was funded by anyone other than, you know, a horrific government like Saudi Arabia or North Korea, I'd say, cool, I don't care.
Yeah.
I'm a fan of this league now, I guess, because the players I like are on it. Like, so sick of this league versus league stuff, because honestly, no one's walking around with a friggin' PGA Tour cap on.
No.
Unless they're being paid to. Anyway.
Don't know if that's answered it for you, Andrew, but it's definitely
how
we feel.
And you know what? We're a couple of weeks out from LIV coming to Adelaide, and genuinely, like, good for the people of Adelaide. They'll get to go and watch what they only otherwise get to see in a year when the President's Cup is here and maybe two-thirds of the guys get pressured into playing the Aussie Open or get paid to play the Aussie Open.
Yeah.
Like, all of us who've said for 10 years that there should be more high-level golf here, you know, I despise the way that LIV's gone about it, and I despise the people who are funding it. And I have severe concerns for the economic viability of the whole ecosystem, given that the cause of it all is a completely unsustainable economic arrangement. But the people of Adelaide are going to get to go and watch Cam Smith and Dustin Johnson and Brooks Koepka and co play golf in a couple of weeks, and good on them.
Hmm. Yeah. All right, our next one. Mike Caridi, he asked us a couple of questions.
Well, he asked you why you hate Kurt Lewis. Have you ever played Kurt Lewis?
I have. I like it. Just got this mental block. I've got Alzheimer's with Kurt Lewis, which is terrible. I'll go down there soon. I'll pay full rate. I'll have a drink in the bar and I'll.
I was going to say, you're going to go to their winery and stay in their accommodation too.
Bloody earth, I will. I will. Yeah. Best merch to buy if you visit a great Aussie track. I'm partial to a course guide, says Mike. So Mike gets he gets to lots and lots of different courses. He's seen heaps and heaps. He'd have a good collection of course guides. I am partial to flags. I've got a collection of flags that one day I'm going to string up in some good fashion in the house somewhere. Not a lot of clubs or courses do them, but many do. I think I probably should have gone down the track of getting a logo ball from each good course that I ever visited as well when I first started. Would have kept that going. Will Davenport, Lucas Michel's caddy at the Masters in 2020, lives down in Florida and put something up on Instagram a couple of days ago where he had 400 golf balls, 400 logo golf balls beautifully displayed up on the wall, and I was a tiny bit envious of that.
You know, so many times over the years I've thought about emailing guys who've hosted me at these places and saying, you know, if I send you $20, can you put a golf ball in the mail? Because, yeah, it is. This is the thing, and Mike kind of touches on it, is that particularly if you're on a big trip, it gets very expensive and very, like, concerning for your luggage space if you're buying cumbersome things, like even golf shirts. But a golf ball or a yardage book is small and light and inexpensive, and you can commit to buying one everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wish I had done the logo ball thing.
I've done lots of caps and polos at places I've gone. I've enjoyed wearing them, but I get nervous when they start to fray and they're at the end of their life and, oh, it's all gone now. And the
I saw the other day, actually, on that topic, because I got a cupboard clean out recently and there was about 20 golf shirts that I can't wear anymore or don't want to or whatever. And I put them in a pile and I thought, I don't think it's something to do with that. And I almost thought about sending them to Big Dog Golf Co. in Melbourne to have him turn into a head cover. But then I saw on Instagram this week, someone did that with shirts and they had them turned into a patchwork blanket. And I thought that's kind of a cool way to recycle old golf shirts or whatnot and not lose the keepsake forever.
My wife's a quilter and she has been looking longingly at some of my old golf polos, and she's made a quilt out of my old work shirts that I wore when the kids were little. And she would do a great job. You could do a cushion,
yeah,
or cushions.
Cushions is a good idea. Yes,
with those. Okay. So
now yeah, the other thing to answer Mike's question, what I love to do, and this is mostly an American pro shops answer because Australian pro shops pretty much all suck at this. You know, they just have golf stuff. I love to buy. So like at Sand Hills, they have the steak seasoning that they use in the kitchen for sale. Yep. And at Bulls Bay in Charleston, they had all the different barbecue sauces and rubs that they use for sale in the pro shop. I love to buy that type of thing. That's, yeah, it's a logo thing, but it's actually, it's a bit of a touch point back to the experience you had there as well.
Well, your drink on your desk this evening.
Yes. Yes, I'm drinking an old-fashioned out of a glass I bought from Old Town Club and using a Demerara syrup I bought in Aiken, South Carolina. And that stuff, like, I don't know, Maddie, maybe I'm a dickhead, but that stuff, when I make one and I sit there and I've got whatever on TV, usually an old golf tournament, I just feel like it connects me back to the places I've been and the people that I shared those days with. And you know, it's almost like I can, you know, for the Harry Potter crowd out there, that I can apparate back to in an instant. I'm back where I was and I can smell the smells and I can remember the experiences. And I think that's such a, it's a big part of traveling for golf is collecting memories of people and places. And I feel like that stuff just keeps you connected to it.
Yeah.
And maybe a golf shirt does too, but, you know, I play golf once every 2 or 3 weeks if I'm lucky, so I just don't get the same usage.
Hmm. Yeah, it's good.
Now, Mark Panopoulos has a question for us, and also shout out, very quick shout out to Mark, because he, as part of my mission to get onto Royal Melbourne West as quickly as I could for the people that listened to the last episode, when I knew I wasn't going to make it to the first tee, he very kindly drove my clubs down, went about an hour out of his way to meet Matty at his house and drop them off, so that all of this finely tuned rush of mine to get to Melbourne and get into RM and be able to play golf as quick as I could. And I had it in my notes last week, Matty, to shout out that that was a key part of the mission, and I missed it. So thank you, Mark, for that. He has a statement more than a question. Controversial take: Magenta Shores is the most overrated course in Australia.
Could be.
Not while Bonville rates top 60.
Yeah, it's hard. I'm going to feel like I sink the boots into someone here. That's, but we said we'd do that at the outset. Yeah. Magenta's very highly rated for what it is, and I'm sure it sort of skates on the aesthetic and a little bit of the terrain and might not pass closer scrutiny. Yeah. There's a couple of courses that people hold really, really highly that might knock it off that most overrated perch.
Mm.
But it's a contender.
I quite like Magenta. My main gripe with Magenta is that they only got 500 metres of beachfront land, which I get because they needed to build the resort and the accommodation to fund it. But they took 500 metres of beachfront land and they built one par five that for the second and third shots, you're actually looking away from the ocean. You know, that's such a absolute no-brainer to build a par three and a par four, maybe a short drive and pitch type par four that both play predominantly towards the beach and the view. And it just kills me that that was what they had to build some magic on the beach, and they built a par five that you got your back to the sea for two thirds of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Bill Corr. You talked about Bill Corr earlier in the episode. There's no way known he's routing that way.
No. And I've been very disciplined just saying they. I hope you've noticed that.
Well done. Brad Sims asked if April is okay for King Island, tacking on RM as well. So Carl Murphy, Aussie Golf Quest, has just come back from 5 days on King Island, I think.
Mm.
Late March, early April. He had one or two more gloomy days, but had some beautiful days while he was down there.
And crucially, it didn't look like he got hammered by wind.
No.
Which
no,
is always the risk on King Island.
Yeah, I think in a perfect world, you have a very short lead time between pulling the trigger and saying, actually, I'm going down there to play. Something within a 7-day forecast or a 14-day forecast, when it looks really manageable and you're not seeing things like 50 and 60 kilometer an hour winds, and you can say, good, I'm down there. All my stars have aligned. I've got some accommodation. Let's go. Failing that, I think you're always a chance to get a big wind. You sort of got your fingers crossed that you don't get walloped while you're down there. But it's certainly not too cold, or it's not as if you're going to get 5 days of rain in April while you're down there at that time of the year. RM's in great condition currently. And April, autumn is a really good time. That's one of the times that you identified in our early episodes, Scott, where you were looking for those cool autumn days where you still had significant daylight saving time has finished, but you're still still got a reasonably long span between sunup and sundown if you want to try and fit in all 36 on that one day when you get to RM. So, yeah, I would have no qualms. From a conditioning perspective, the club plays 4 medals a year. They have seasonal medals, and the autumn medal is in April. They'll have invariably hosted pennant sometime around then. And one of the big events for the club during the year is the Ivo Witten event, which is a randomly drawn pairs better ball par event for a trophy and a board honours. And that's in May. So that string of March, April, early May is usually really good for conditioning at RM. Mm. So,
yeah, I think anywhere on the East Coast from end of February when the grass stops growing so aggressively until whatever time that winter that dormancy really kicks in is the prime time to play golf.
Yeah, same.
On the Cooch courses. Obviously, the Lakes is good year-round because it's Kaikouyu, but most of the good stuff's Cooch.
And Clates would be remiss if we didn't say that National Moon is good in the winter with its fescue becoming the more dominant strain in their fairways in the cooler months.
And 13th Beach, I think, is a blend as well of fescue and Cooch. Yep. Quite noticeable when I was down there last week. Rightio, Sam Windsor, any chance of an AGP golf day at some stage in the future? I think yes. I think it's baby steps. We first had to start the pod, and then we had to have the discipline to keep doing it regularly. I heard someone recently on a podcast I was listening to talking about entrepreneurship, saying that starting something is infinitely easier than keeping it going. And I can absolutely attest to that after the last 7 or 8 months of doing this and keeping it regular and varied and whatnot. But, yeah, I think absolutely, look, we're starting to build a bit of a community of people who listen and engage and whatnot. And I would love to do, you know, a golf day in Sydney, perhaps down in Melbourne as well.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
It'd be really nice to bring people together.
I organised a rollback event pre-COVID, and I've been wanting to do another one. We played 12 holes at Kingston Heath with 10 clubs, old golf balls, 300cc max driver head size, and that was a really, really cool event. And that was the last event that I organised, so that is 4 years ago now.
Mm.
So, yeah, maybe an AGP.
Yeah. I'd love to do one. I've often thought about doing something at New South where it's like you play the tips in the morning and then in the afternoon you play the gold tees that are 5,000 metres. You know, in Melbourne, perhaps with you doing something, it's like play the modern gear in the morning and then in the afternoon it's either Persimmon or Hickory or, you know, old Titleist, you know, 90 Balladas or something. That'd be cool.
I've got 4 dozen HP2 tours just sitting there waiting for that event. First generation, really solid core, playable ball. So one day. Harry Hawkins was after a pod devoted to Albury to Echuca along the river. And in the same vein, Kevin O'Connell and Lockie Bayliss had asked about the Murray. Lockie in particular had asked for a 4-course itinerary.
Yeah, so I late last year significantly underbidded a proposal for some work at Albury Hospital in the hope that we would win it and I would finally have an excuse to get down to the Murray and play some golf. And apologies to any of the executive from my company that are listening, but man's got to do what a man's got to do. Never heard back. We didn't win the work. Haven't been to the Murray. One of my best mates since I was, you know, 10 years old loves Murray Downs. And one of the main recollections I have of being obsessive about reading golf magazines in the 90s when I was a junior Maddie is that Yarrawonga and Border, I reckon, advertised in every single edition of every single magazine I ever read. They were prolific. And so I've always thought, one day I need to spend some money with Yarrawonga and Borders because they've really done the hard yards 30 years ago, making me aware of them, of their brand. So I'm going Murray Downs, Yarrawonga, I think, has 36. And I'm intrigued by Black Bull because for most of us, when we watch the PGA Tour and we see things like the bear trap or the snake trap or any of those stupid confected things about golf courses, we think that is the dumbest shit I've ever seen. But the people who developed Black Bull were inspired, and I think they have a little three-hole loop towards the end of the round called the Bull Ring. And so how could I go to the Murray and not take on the Bull Ring, Matty?
You'd have to. Does it compare to the Green Mile? Where is it in the pantheon of, yeah. You'd have to do that.
Got it. So Black Bull, Murray Downs, Yarrawonga and Border.
Yeah, I reckon that's a solid itinerary. We should probably ask Brian Walsh to come on at some stage and sort of Sherpa us through Cobram, Yarrawonga, Tokemall, Murray Downs, Barham. He's familiar. He goes on a trip every year up to that neck of the woods and has been doing so forever. So he'd be a good voice of authority there.
We might have to organize a long weekend.
Yeah, that wouldn't go astray either. That'd be nice. All right, Joseph Ryan. Thank you for your question. Someone attempted a half answer online from what I could see, but hopefully we give you a bit more.
They told him to play somewhere else, which is not really what he was hoping to hear.
No.
Let's be a bit better bedside manner.
So Joseph is heading to RACV Royal Pines on the Gold Coast, a kind of Bucks Day. And then Noosa Springs, day before the wedding, with his brother-in-law, ahead of the wedding in June. Any advice, tips, or comments?
So I would say everyone says, I haven't played RACV since I was a teenager. The Royal Pines. I haven't played since I was a teenager. Apparently it's greatly improved since they redid it for hosting the Australian PGA. I don't know about that. But that's the feedback I remember hearing, is that it's greatly improved. You'll be on the Gold Coast with your brother-in-law firing up for a wedding. I mean, I feel like that's what Gold Coast golf was built for, right?
Yep. Yeah. I would keep it light. I wouldn't be going to the plates. I wouldn't be playing stroke. I wouldn't be carrying a card. I don't know if others are going to be there with you and your brother-in-law. I would do Ambrose. I would make yourselves a team. I would laugh at the bad shots and see how many holes you can birdie as a collective.
Or if you're really good golfers, you and the brother-in-law head-to-head have a match that has some very important to you prize attached or significance. And, you know, if your brother-in-law and your sister get along forevermore, you'll have this lifetime memory with this bloke to remember this epic match for the ages 2 days before his wedding.
Which could become a perpetual trophy.
There you go.
And a recurring reason for another golf trip.
There you go. This, yes, I like. Noosa Springs, probably same advice, same deal. The only thing I'd say about Noosa Springs and Noosa is two pieces of advice. The RACV resort at Noosa, if you have kids, is incredible and super good value. Great pool, great games room that's like a mini time zone. The rooms are incredible and huge. So not an ad, but I'm so passionate about RACV at Noosa that I'll throw that in. And likewise, not an ad, eat at Paradise Arcade in Noosa, which is this can't book a table, cheap and cheerful Mexican, and it just makes me happy to be there. So if it comes to being in Noosa, those are the only two pieces of advice I've got.
That's good advice.
I've been and, for the last 4 years every year, and I haven't touched a golf club up there because.
Oh, wow.
It's just.
Okay.
Just being there is too good.
Nice. Okay. That speaks volumes because there's courses around the place. There you go. Hopefully that helps, Joseph. You've got to let us know how you go.
Simon Bon, what about a quick spin through Gold Coast golf trip course options?
That's definitely on our agenda.
Mm.
Whether or not it's a 2 or 3 minute answer at this point, or whether it's an entire episode devoted to that.
I'll give you a 30 second answer, south to north. These are places that I would be very happy if I woke up tomorrow morning and I was playing golf there, I'd be very happy about it. South to north, starting on the south side of the border, Mwullumbah has three green keepers. It's on some really cool land. It's your definition of a country golf course, and it's really great. Coolangatta Tweed River Course has some really funky little architecture. You know, a par three with a green that's 70 yards long. Great short fours and whatnot. Really recommend Coolie Tweed River Course, not the West Course. West Course is okay. The Glades, Matty, I've hammered you on this. I love the Glades. I'm going back up there in May. Mate of mine who's having a baby is a member there. We're going to go out for a hit. Can't wait. I think the Glades are super duper. And I think it's not Bob Harrison's best course because he started with a swamp versus National or, you know, Elliston, where he started with a lot more than a swamp. I think the Glades is so good. So shout out the Glades. Sanctuary Cove. I really like the Pines course. The Palms course. And it gets a bit of whatever. I think it's getting redone again. It's just super fun, I think. Yeah, it's a cartball course and it's not cohesive, but lots of short fours, lots of fun threes. So I want to give that a yell. And Hope Island has some really good stuff too. Some good short par fours dotted throughout. The finish is like, if you wanted to distill Gold Coast golf into two holes, it would be that long iron par three over the water,
yeah,
and then the par five up the water, you know, before you walk into a clubhouse full of Wallabies memorabilia. It's like, bang, Gold Coast golf. But any of those golf courses, Gold Coast gets so much crap thrown at it for golf, and mostly rightly so, in terms of architecture, because that's what we're into, right? I'm not yucking other people's yums. If you love that stuff, then I love that for you. But those five golf courses, sign me up any day of the week. Happy man.
That's a neat little trip. We might still devote an entire episode. I think we talked about it at the outset, didn't we?
You know, we should get on. We should get Elvis Smiley on to do that with us because he's a native of the Gold Coast, grew up playing at Southport. I reckon Elvis would have, you know, a bit of a different perspective to you and I as well.
He definitely would.
Clayton, are you listening? Can you have a word to Elvis about that for us?
Thank that'd you. Be neat. I'd really enjoy that. But yeah, you were talking about the difficulty in continuing things. Starting things is easy and it's exciting and keeping it going. I thought we were going to do about 20 of these. And I think this is number 20.
This is number 20. Yeah.
Yeah. And haven't done Peninsula Kingswood, haven't done Royal Adelaide, haven't done East, haven't done Wickham, haven't done the Murray. So we're going to go well over the predicted initial total, but that's good. Ross Flanagan's done over 200, My Love of Golf, which is very impressive. I don't know how he does that. Man's a machine.
Well, you know what? If you do one a week, then in 4 years, you'll find that you've done 200, Matty. We've just got to keep... You know what I mean? It's like, you know, people talk about their sobriety and people say, how can you do that for the rest of your life? And it's like, well, I just do it every day. And if I do it every day, then I'll have done it for the rest of my life.
Yeah, true.
So every Wednesday, we just need to be looking at each other on this screen, and before we know it, we'll have done 200. Next question.
Ben Flavel Are there any courses in Queensland worth seeing for an international visitor? I think Royal Queensland fits the bill. I think it's a really interesting course on a very flat site that's a floodplain where Clayton and Cocking and Ashmead build in some huge interest. Bunkers are in precisely the right spots. Greens are really cool, understated. They fit the very minimal ground movement of the entire site. So the whole terrain sort of just reflected in their green contouring. Great flat course. I'd struggle to think of another apart from that. I think everything else that Queensland Golf offers, you probably get to see elsewhere. There's not something of unbelievable quality or remarkably different character that you're not going to see somewhere else.
So I wanted to get this quote right. So, sorry, I was just pulling out the 2020 rankings edition of Golf Australia magazine. So the self-indulgent risk of quoting oneself. And this was completely legitimately true. So my comments about Royal Queensland in that edition say, a disgruntled golfer told me of Royal Queensland, you can drive it anywhere without penalty and the greens are too hard to stop the ball on. He was actually describing why it's so brilliant. He just hasn't worked it out yet. Well, and there are not really many or perhaps any other courses in Australia that do that so well on a land that gives so little as Royal Queensland does. I think that alone makes it worth visiting for an international visitor.
Yeah.
Because you're going to see something there that you're not going to see somewhere else. And the only other course in Queensland that comes to mind to answer that question, because I don't want to preempt what our international visitor might be into, is I didn't really enjoy Hamilton Island Golf Club on Dent Island, just off Hamilton Island. However, if you had come from the other side of the planet and you're probably escaping winter to come to Australia in summer and you go to Hamilton Island and you catch the boat across and they pick you up from the boat and you go up the hill in the golf cart and the clubhouse is pretty good there with a good restaurant and you play for 4.5 hours with all these remarkable views and there's a couple actually legitimately good holes on the back nine with these incredible clifftop settings, it's not for the purposes that we would say a golf course is worth seeing for an international visitor. But I can appreciate how a lot of international visitors could spend half a day playing golf on Dent Island and go home and tell their mates that you've got to see this place I played.
Yeah, their photos would be remarkable. The views and the experience, they'd really enjoy. Yeah.
Like it's way too hard and you lose like so much artillery, even if you're a good player. And I swear to God, the drive from the 17th green to the 18th tee is a kilometre. So there's plenty that we could complain about. But I think maybe just underpinning how perfectly fine but maybe not special a lot of the golf in Queensland is, maybe that's, you know. And again, for an international visitor, I'm not bagging out on a whole state's golf. You know, there's some really fun stuff. I just enthused about five different courses on the Goldie that I'd happily play tomorrow and would be really excited to play. So that's not dissing Queensland. I just think, as we've talked about previously, golf that is internationally significant rarely exists north of the latitude of Sydney or south of the latitude of Augusta, Georgia. When you look at the top 100, it's either south of Sydney or north of Augusta. That's just the climate that leads to good golf.
Yeah. Last two questions.
Yeah. Well, let's roll them into one. Mark Grant, Heath Dixon. When are you coming to Perth? When are you covering Peninsula Kingswood? My parents are currently in WA with their caravan, and they keep sending me pictures that make me want to bring this visit to Perth forward sooner and sooner. It looks, the water is like impossibly blue, and the skies are similar, and they're in Albany at the moment, so I've requested photos of the golf course there because it looks like it could be like a, you know, low-key Port Fairy kind of arrangement. Coming to Perth soon. As soon as I can. PK, Matty?
I played South recently for the third time since OCCM have done their magic there. Would have had probably half a dozen laps of North, maybe more by now. I suspect that Ross Flanagan is going to be our guest.
Hmm. I'd love to see it before. I haven't played North post-Reno. I'm the problem. It's me. I'm slowing us down. But I just discovered, I wasn't aware that my club has reciprocals at PK. And so I just discovered that 3 weeks ago. So I'm even considering, Maddie, down and back in a day just to see PK North so that I can participate when you and Ross are talking about it.
Okay.
Because it is a glaring, people ask about that more than any other course. And so let's try and make that a priority.
Yeah, that Wickham, East, Royal Adelaide are the four individual courses that are highest priority to me. And I don't want to have the Peninsula Kingswood podcast without you having seen at least North.
Yeah.
Because I think you'll add an enormous amount to it.
Well,
and it's a course of great quality and great note, and so it deserves as much effort as we can put into it, and it'll be better for having both of us comment. And
the thing that excites me too is that whenever I ask somebody who I care about what they have to say about PK North, they have feelings about it. They have good feelings. They have misgivings. They have things they think are the best they've ever seen. They have things that they think, you know, didn't quite work or were trying a bit too hard. I'm all about golf courses that make you feel things positive and negative, and not everyone just says, oh, yeah, it's fine. Yeah, it's pretty good. So
no one says that. No,
everyone has, you know, their answer is a few minutes long because they have some things to say. And I, yeah, can't wait to have things to say.
All right. So rest assured that will happen.
We're fresh out of questions. Thank you all for submitting those. That was good fun thinking about them and getting through them, hearing what Maddie had to say. So we'd love to do another one of these in a few months' time, a few more questions. But thank you all for listening. Thanks for engaging and sending us questions and sending us feedback on episodes, whether it's good or bad or you disagree with a take. That's what makes, you know, this really fun. You know, I love always talking about golf, but the fact that we have an audience who sort of cares about what we're saying and cares about the topic like we do and is interested to tune in each week really means the world. So thank you all so much for that.
Spot on. Yeah. Till next time. Looking forward to whatever course we discuss next. And
yeah, this is the beauty of how poorly organized this is we have no idea what the next episode is. And that's exciting.
It is. Enjoy Easter. Enjoy the Masters. Mate.
And happy 50th full out of this week.
Thought we were going to get through that without this. All right. Thank you. Good on you.
Bye, mate.
See ya.